The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
First of all, I would say if you have a tough relationship in your life, that is very normal.
Right.
I mean, I think sometimes we start to feel like, is it just me? Like, right. Do I just somehow attract difficult relationships, you know? And so I guess just let everyone just give a collective sigh. This is normal. Right. Because anytime you have an expectation, it's way up here.
Right.
And then you have an experience and it's down here. The ground between those right. two is where disappointment grows wild and free.
Right.
And anytime you have a relationship, you're going to have that dynamic because you're dealing with two different people with two different mindsets, right. with two different sets of opinions, you know, all of that.
Right.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. Let's change gears a little bit and we'll talk about just that. You just heard that audio there. It was Lisa, I believe it's Turkhurst. She's an author, and she's talking a little about easing into a conversation about difficult relationships. I bet you probably have been in one. Maybe you're in one right now, right? All of us have relationships that can get sticky from time to time, and, you know, it can be tough. It can be difficult. Toxic relationships. I thought maybe today we can explore this. Let's take a look at anger. I remember during the Chapel of Divine Mercy, I was praying, and one day we had so many intentions from women who were calling in and talking about the anger that their spouse had in the relationship. Maybe you're dealing with an angry spouse, right? Maybe you got a toxic relationship right now at work. Maybe it's somebody you're dating. You know, maybe it's a family member. Let's talk about this. And in just a moment, Dr. Bob Enright is going to be joining me. I always enjoy tapping into his expertise on this. He really is an expert on forgiveness. He's written books on it, and we'll get you plugged in. So if you want to join us, you know how to do that. Feel free to call in. But you know, we know marriage is under attack in our country today. And if you really want to make a difference, I think, for marriage, then you need to work on your own marriage. The old saying is that we need to be the difference that we want to see in the world, right? And that I think it's especially true in marriage. And one of the key destroyers of marriage, something that people, I think, really need to work on, is anger. Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons, who is a good friend of Dr. Enright's, he often spoke to me on the show about this, often talked about how, couples deal with this issue. They're faced with the issue, and they don't know how to deal with it. And quite often, it ends up in divorce. And the reason for this divorce, quite often, is the anger that undergirds it all. You know, and if you're dealing with this, you want to get in, feel free to join us. There might be good cause for anger. I don't want to diminish that. Like finding your spouse has hidden a secret, you know, or there's something that needs to come to light. But giving in to sinful anger, that can destroy a relationship. So. But we see it today, too. One final thought on this, because I was just thinking about what we saw with Beto O'Rourke, right? I mean, do you see the anger that erupted when he was in Texas? Was that justifiable anger? We see it in the streets, right? When it comes to Roe v. Wade, we see it with gun control. We see it with immigration. A lot of anger in the country right now, a lot of division. I'd like to welcome to the program Professor Enright. He's a professor of educational psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's one of the founding board members of the International Forgiveness Institute, and it's good to have him here with us this afternoon. Doctor, thank you for your good work. It's great to talk with you once again.
I'm honored to be with you, Drew.
You know, we're seeing such toxicity in the culture, you know, everything is so partisan in when it comes to politics. It doesn't seem to be a middle ground. You know, we're seeing it in the streets when it comes to the issue of life. You're on one side or the other. And we see this manifestation of anger. We see the shooting in Uvalde. We see the anger in marriages today. Give me your analysis. How much of what's going on in the world right now is being driven by anger? And maybe we can get to the root of this. We might be able to quell the violence and the ugliness that we see so often displayed.
Yeah, well, I think you're 100% right, Drew, about this. A large part of it, in my opinion, is there's become a norm, an acceptable consensus, that it's perfectly okay to spew this anger onto others whenever you're feeling it. And I can't ever remember having a norm like this that exists in society. And one thing that really is happening, and people don't even talk about this, I make a distinction between power over and power for. And a lot of people think it's laudatory to have power over others, like interrupting a speech, for example, and being hauled out. It's considered self-righteous, but that's power over others. And what we're missing in society is power for, using my influence to assist others, to help others, to give to others. That seems to have fallen completely away as a norm. And so power over versus power for, I think, needs to be a conversation in society, because we're almost subconsciously denying that we can be of service to others, and everybody gets in your face with power over and thinks it's just fine. And what does that do? It leads to an eruption of anger that we're seeing all over the place.
Yeah, and we see it not just in the public square, right? But you see the rate of divorce in families today, and I often wonder, you know, I remember you were just receiving so many phone calls from different spouses talking about anger in their relationship and how they're afraid to do certain things. They don't want to set the anger of the spouse off. This is a major problem. And is it getting worse? Has it always been there? I mean, what are you seeing in your practice?
Well, I basically, a lot of what I see is people, again, thinking, what's in it for me? Okay, that I have to be the one to get something out of this rather than give. And so the getting seems to be dominating for some rather than the giving. And if you're not getting what you want, what do? You try to control the other. And how do you control the other? By getting angry. Because then the other gets fearful, and then once the other gets fearful, that one who's getting angry is in control in what's happening. That person now has power over the other, has control over the other, and both become miserable, and it obviously doesn't work.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And it's not just anger. There seems to be a tremendous rise in toxicity. Don't you think so, Doctor, in relationships and just in the culture? And I think it drags so many people down. It sucks the life out of so many people today. How do you deal with that in your practice?
Well, I think we have really an effect of the lockdowns, the pandemic, the isolation, and even though we're supposedly coming out of that, there's an effect that weakens people so that they do become more easily irritated, more deeply irritated, more deeply angry and intensively angry because of all that has happened. And so we're not dealing with just normal everyday life. We're dealing with that and all of its challenges, plus the pandemic as an overlay to all of that. And so people seem to be much more sensitive, much more irritated. And a lot of it is because most of us had never even heard the word pandemic until it started 2 years ago. And I think people are reeling from the effects of that. That's truly hurting relationships right now, and everyone's thinking it's just relationship, but it's really an overlay of this historical event as well.
Yeah, I remember speaking to Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons in the past, and he was talking, it was a previous school shooting, it was a while ago, and I looked at the issue of this just lack of empathy in our cultures. You know, we were seeing this spill into, you know, to real life. Not only the level of anger in our culture is rising, but we keep hearing about division in our country, and then we see these horrible incidences. And there's a lot of factors that go behind it. I think fatherlessness, and there was a great woundedness on the part of that boy. He certainly needed, I think, some intercession there. But look at the devastation he has created to you know, for so many lives and so many families out there. There was a study, I think the American Sociological Review did it. It was a couple years ago, and they looked at the number of close friends that people had, like back in 1985, and the average was about 3, I think, something. That declined to about 2 by the year 2004, and I think it goes down. And I wonder how much of it is related, one, to anger, two, to this lack of empathy. As I was saying, Dr. Fitzgibbons really thinks this is a mental health crisis right now, that the decline in human empathy is creating a global risk right now. This is, in some respects, a major issue. I don't know what the medical community... is there a sense of how serious this is? I mean, we're looking at, we want to solve these problems with guns and shootings and things along those lines. What's the heart of it? What's the core of it?
Well, you know, a lot of times the medical community doesn't look at the heart. Right now, a lot of the debate is about how to restructure certain ways of society, like gun control. Okay, that's more of a materialist way of dealing with things. But if you come down to it, yes, that might have something to do with it. But ultimately, what's in the heart of those who treat others very badly? Growing in empathy, growing in what I call the moral virtues, because I study forgiveness, as you know, Drew, and all of these are off the radar. Okay, when was the last time you heard a civil conversation in regular society about the worth of other people, the inherent built-in worth of other people? You don't hear about it. And so a major, major problem is we look to environmental issues to solve problems, and we don't look at the heart. And when we don't do that, then we do decline in empathy. We decline in the moral virtues. We decline in having power for others. Instead, we have power over others. And I think it's a tragedy that we're not looking at the heart. I remember the late Millard Fuller, who started Habitat for Humanity. He said to me once, "We build the houses, you build the hearts. And unless we build the hearts, they don't stay in the homes." And what he meant by that is we can do all these environmental structures and look at the materialism of the world and try to make people more comfortable and get their basic needs met. But if they're still torn up inside, he would build the homes and people couldn't stay in them. And he was criticized for that. And so he realized, we build the houses, but you build the hearts. And unless we build the hearts, they can't stay in the homes. So do all the gun control you want. But if you don't help with the hearts of these young men in particular, whose hearts are totally ripped up, the gun control isn't going to do a darn thing because we're not looking at the heart.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. We'll grab a few phone calls. I sit back here and I just marvel. I'm a cultural observer. I know that we're more interconnected than ever today with technology and with means of being able to communicate. And yet we have more lonely, more angry people than ever. And that leads to hopelessness. It leads to despair. And, I think it plays out in what we're seeing in the suicide rate, you know, a 30% increase in suicide rate. And, you know, it's tragic. It really is tragic. Joseph in Arlington Heights, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. A terrific show. Doctor, just to the point Drew was making just a moment ago, I was always under the belief that oftentimes underneath anger or rage, one finds hopelessness or deep sadness. And that is perhaps, I think, equates with what you're saying. I'd love to hear your thoughts on my thesis.
Well, I think it's very interesting, Joseph, actually, because a lot of times when we're angry, we're not necessarily angry about something that happened today or yesterday. For example, we've worked with people in hospice, and they had anger when we worked with them. But when we asked them what was making them angry, some of it happened 40 years ago.
Wow.
Okay? Yes. And so there's enough. Once you start getting treated unjustly, then what happened to you in the past, way in the past, is hidden. And yet you carry that in your heart. And if you carry that injustice and the mistreatment and the abuse quietly and silently in your heart over the years, hope, in fact, does go down. And when that happens, then you end up with sadness, and then you end up even sometimes for some people with rage, and people scratch their head, and they say, how did that happen? Well, it's been building. Yeah, where did it come from? Well, we don't look back far enough, you see, and those effects build up. Because, see, one thing about being treated unfairly and the toxicity of anger, that anger, once it takes hold, even 40 years ago, is a very unwelcome guest in the heart because it never knows when to leave. Mm-hmm. And so people miss the point. Yes.
I wonder, when I see the amount of hostility and anger in younger people and teens that are very disrespectful in their treatment of authority, even parents and teachers, whether or not that too is coming from a sense of hopelessness because they don't understand what's going to happen to the planet, or that culture is capitalistic and racist and on with all of the isms. That I think deplete them of hope and joy, and instead replace it with a hopelessness.
Exactly. And so the $64,000 question, Joseph, is what do we do when people have that hopelessness in the heart from being treated very abusively, let's say, in the past? How do you get rid of that, you see? And so what we have to do is actually start growing in the moral virtues, and that's off the charts in terms of discussion. Part of it is, as Drew said at the beginning of the show, working on the crucified path of forgiving those who've hurt them deeply. Another is cultivating respect for others. But that takes time. You can't just turn that on and off like a light bulb. And so to grow in the moral virtues is effortful. It takes practice and time. And we need to get at it. And that's off the charts in terms of mental health. It's off the charts in most public education. And we're seeing the desperate lives of those who aren't even being coached to grow in the moral virtues. And that, I think, is the heart of the tragedy here.
Yeah. Hey, Joseph, thanks for your call. Great insight. I could not agree with you more. I think it's so true. I think it's such a great point. Underneath of all of this anger is a sense of hopelessness. Doctor, it's a big issue for a lot of people. How do you deal with difficult relationships? If you're in one, you can join us. It's 888-914-9149. If you've got a perspective or a thought, feel free to dial in. Danielle's listening in Windham, Maine. She's wants to join the conversation as well. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate this topic. I'd like to just speak to my own personal experience with anger, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I have learned about myself is what's going on in those moments of anger, like what's happening externally, what's happening internally, how do I move through it without causing harm to somebody? And it's really, really easy to become overwhelmed with the things going on in the external world. And when I bring that internally, I feel anger. And I really believe that anger for me stems from fear of all kinds, fear of people not being okay, fear of people being threatened or harmed, or fear of like unknown outcomes, like in these uncertain times. So, you know, when I work with other people, I tell people, like, anger is okay, but what you do with that is another thing. So anger for me is a way to just take a moment to say, like, hey, what's going on right now? Yeah. And what am I afraid of? And am I going to react to this fear? Am I going to live in this fear? Or am I going to jump to faith? Am I going to bring God into this immediately and say, God, what do I do with this? Where do I go with this? How do I live with this? How do I act from this? And it's always relief. The fear sheds away and light and truth are present, and it's love. You fight the fear and you fight the anger with love.
Well, thank you, Danielle. I'm going to let Dr. Enright respond to you. You heard her make her point quite eloquently, Doctor.
Yes. Well, thank you for the insights, Danielle. Let's make a distinction between healthy and unhealthy anger for a moment. Philosophers use the word resentment, and when philosophers use it, they mean it just like you do, Danielle, where you should not be treated disrespectfully, the world shouldn't be treated disrespectfully, and so you're reacting saying there needs to be justice, there needs to be something better than what's here. And that kind of healthy anger can give us the energy and the resolve to do our best to make things better within our own heart, with others in our relationships, and to the world. When psychologists and psychiatrists use the word anger, they oftentimes mean toxic anger. And so there's a difference in what philosophers mean by resentment and what psychiatrists and psychologists and mental health professionals mean by resentment. And the kind of resentment the mental health professionals talk about is the kind that gets a hold of you, where you're no longer just seeing what needs to be righted and you're using that energy for good, but that kind of anger overwhelms you and brings you down. Either way, though, what you had said is when we turn to faith, when we turn to love, that can help quell the good anger. And the good anger is short term, see. But the key then is how then do you tame the ongoing, deep, overwhelming anger that the mental health professionals call resentment. And there's where, in my humble opinion, the Catholic Church shines. And here's what I mean by this. You had said you turned to faith, okay? The Catholic Church would tell us to turn specifically in faith to what we call redemptive suffering, okay? And we learn that from the soaring apostolic letter of St. John Paul II's apostolic letter Salvifici Doloris, where he tells us that we can, through our faith, when we are feeling this kind of anger, when we're feeling the discomfort, bring it to faith, specifically the cross of Christ, and suffer with Jesus Christ, our suffering united to his suffering, for good. For someone who might have hurt us, for a better world, as Mother Angelica used to say when she was hurting, and she would redemptively suffer, she would offer it up by saying, save souls. Okay? Yeah. And so all of a sudden, either whether it's the healthy anger that's still uncomfortable, or the toxic anger that gets a hold of us, we need a way to deal with it. And only in the Catholic Church have I ever found the idea of a redemptive suffering. See, where we go to the suffering, we lean into the suffering, we don't run from the suffering, and we run to our Savior with it. And being united with him, we can deal with it. And paradoxically, it begins to lift. So you use the word faith and love. Yep. The Catholic Church breathes life into that and says it's the faith of the cross of Christ and love with him. Yep. When I am suffering. And you know what? The paradox is that's where the healing begins, right? Not at the foot of the cross, but united on the cross with Christ.
Well, Doctor, let me take a quick break here. Danielle, thanks for your call. When we come back, we'll take your calls. If you're just joining us, we're taking a look today at a culture that's been immersed in anger, right? There's increasing toxicity. You may be experiencing it in your own home, maybe in your own relationship. Jay in San Jose, doctor, his wife wants a divorce. She's become very hostile and anger. They lost a baby 2 years ago. And quite often, I think that happens when couples experience great loss. That anger can manifest. The other spouse can be blamed. We'll take his calls and all your calls when we return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I mean, you've got to get this under control. I'll come back when we can have a rational conversation.
And
here,
it's very scary to set boundaries with someone who's angry. And if the anger's not escalating beyond the control of this person, they will be so grateful that you did rein them in, because nobody afterwards likes to have, you know, lost it. And a one-time moment is so different than a recurring pattern. If
right.
It's a recurring pattern, you absolutely have to address it. It's very difficult to change. If somebody doesn't provide a consequence for a bad behavior, it's very difficult to be motivated to change, especially when it's a deep core issue like anger, where there's adrenaline and there's wrong learning probably established, and maybe some giving in to things that have become poor habits.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Dr. Lawson and Leslie Perot giving you a little bit of advice. They're a counseling duo on dealing with anger in a partner. And maybe you're experiencing this in your own relationship. I've heard a lot of people call up and talk about how angry their spouses can get and can be. And how do you resolve that issue? Anger is such a great stumbling block, you know? And it's not just within the family. You turn on your TV, right? You watch the carping and the vitriol. And we have self-righteous anger. Everybody thinks they're right. You know, so much anger in the culture today. You got to be careful. It can really lead you into sin. And as Dr. Enright had pointed out, there is righteous indignation. There is just anger at times. But quite often, anger can be a poison and can be incredibly, incredibly destructive. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Let's go right to the phones. Jay is listening to us, and he's going through a tough time. His wife wants a divorce and is often hostile and angry. Jay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. If you remember, I called in about, you know, last month, and
I said,
you know, we'd been together for 18 years. We had a child pass away, a baby, and she left the church. And, I mean, we're not on speaking terms at all whatsoever. It's all going through attorneys, and it's just, I just don't understand where the rage comes from, because, you know, the day before we're holding hands and, you know, being a happy married couple, and then February 16th, the world came to an end, and she's just not stopped being hostile. She will not de-escalate. And, you know, I was going to therapy, and one of the things my therapist said is, she's not mad at you. She's just taking it out on you.
Yeah, that's right.
And she also said that hurt people hurt people. But I just don't get the utter rage, just blind rage.
Hey, doctor, let's address this. And my heart goes out to him. I remember Jay called into the Chapel of Divine Mercy, I think it was last month. And I often think of, you know, situations where a couple's happily married, but tragedy befalls one of their children. You know, a child is abducted or injured or killed or something happens, and the other spouse takes it out on the other spouse. Your advice for Jay, how can you help him? He wants his marriage to heal and to move forward, but when the other partner doesn't want anything in to do with it, when there's anger and hostility like she's manifesting, how do you bridge that gap?
Okay, I think a big one, again, is what I would call preparation of the heart. And so the big question I would have for Jay and his wife would be, how much preparation had your wife had in the past for bearing pain? In other words, getting to know the crucified Christ, taking up her cross every day and following in his steps. Does she have even a tiny spark of that? Okay? And if she does, from going to Mass, maybe Good Friday as an example, and what she has learned from Good Friday, if you could ignite the spark of her remembering when she has borne the pain for others because of her mentor, her first love, which is Jesus Christ. And what can you do to fan that into flame? And what she has to actually do, Jay, is bear the pain of this immense tragedy so that she doesn't take it out on you. I agree 100% with your therapist. She's not angry at you. She's angry at the world, and you know what? She could be angry at God. And she has to be careful with that because God doesn't behave unjustly, so you'd have to change her thinking on that. But where is the Good Friday insight where she is willing to say, I have been crucified? And that crucifixion is not necessarily just a waste. In fact, she can grow spiritually in ways that would surprise her and eventually give her resurrection joy. And so that's what I would ask, if she's willing to even talk with you about that. What has she learned in terms of this, the Via Dolorosa and Calvary and Jesus Christ suffering and her suffering with him? That may be the beginning of her realizing, hey, I have to bear this. Here's another thing to keep in mind with her, if she will talk with you. What will life be like from her 2 years from now if you get a divorce? Mm. Here's what people don't even think about. There's going to be complete silence between you. And I have found that a lot of times women in particular, once they leave a relationship, their heart never entirely leaves it. And so 2 years from now, she may have a yearning to get back to the love she had with you at first, and you may be gone. Okay? Does she really want that kind of silence for the rest of your life? Most people don't think about the future when they divorce, but that happens all the time, especially with women whose heart never quite gets over the love. They think they have today, but 2 years from now, no. I've seen it over and over. So try to start the spark going of her walking the Via Dolorosa with Jesus Christ and see if she's willing to bear the pain. Of course, it's her own free will. She has to be willing to do that. And through her rage, she has to find that spark with Jesus Christ. But you know what? If it happens, a miracle could occur in your marriage.
All right.
Well, yeah, we need a miracle. We really do.
Yes, you do. But God is the crafter of miracles.
And I know a lot of people are listening, Jay. A lot of people's heart is aching for you. You're a good man. You want your marriage to succeed. And unfortunately, tragedy came in. And I'm really sorry that you got to go through so much pain. But I'll ask everyone who is listening, please say a prayer for Jay, for his marriage, that they can be reconciled, that deep woundedness that his wife is going through and Jay is going through can be healed. Richard, listening in Rancho Cucamonga, California, thanks for joining us.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Just a quick comment. So me and my wife have been married for 12 years, and we've been definitely through some rocky points as far as my concern goes, is I was a very anger and quick-to-temper person growing up, and it trickled over into my marriage. So any advice I could give to other married couples out there, seek help, seek outside help, get professional help. It's tremendous for our marriage. For the last year and a half, we've been seeing a marriage therapist that Relevant Radio recommended, and we've been seeing him, and it's done. We still have anger, but it's healthy anger, I guess, if you want to say it that way. But seek help. Don't be too man enough to talk to somebody, because I know there's a lot of men out there that say, I don't have a problem. You swallow your pride and go seek help. For the sanctity of your marriage.
That's well said. Richard, thank you for the call. And doctor, I mean, that's really important. So often people think there's a stigma in getting help, but that's not really the case, is it? I mean, it can save your marriage. I think it's so important that people explore those options.
Indeed. And in fact, Richard gave us a golden nugget. He said he had anger when growing up. He brought that into the marriage, but so did she bring imperfections into the marriage. Mm-hmm. And it's really a really good exercise for any couple, whether they're in a honeymoon phase after 10 years are struggling now, and especially prior to marriage, to think about the difficulties in growing up, the pains, the wounded heart when growing up, and what you in particular are bringing in and what the other is bringing in, so that you can turn back in time, see your weaknesses, humbly accept them, forgive those who've tripped you up while you were growing up, but each of you be aware of the other's wounds. And that doesn't make you then, you know, skittish about the relationship. If anything, it humanizes each of you. You realize both of you have a weakness and multiple weaknesses that you're both bringing in. And then as you work on those, when he starts getting angry with his wife, the key would be, you're bringing this in. And then what is she bringing in? Maybe she was in the consequence of, let's say, an angry parent, where she gets overly scared over it. So see, now you have two kinds of patterns that fit together for conflict. One gets angry, the other gets overly fearful, but they're bringing it in from the family of origin. And it's really good to have a courageous conversation with cultivating the virtue of humility, and show each other the weaknesses you're bringing in.
Here's a great question for you. John's listening in Los Angeles, California. Let me get him into the conversation as well. John, good afternoon.
Hey there. Can you hear me, you guys?
We can, John. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, great. First off, thank you so much. First off, praying, just if Jay's still listening, just want to let you know that praying for you and your family and things reconcile and happen. So, my question is a couple things. Number one, kind of along the lines of family of origin, specifically, how does divorce and childhood trauma and also alcoholism, perhaps a child had two alcoholic parents or one, how does that play a role in anger later on in life? And then secondly, are there instances in which hormones play a role, particularly in women, with maybe volatility or fluctuation of hormones in their anger? And then also, last question, sorry, put it there.
That's great.
Does medication ever help? I know it doesn't help with the root cause of the problem, but does it ever help with curbing anger from one's past?
All right, great stuff. So let's start with the first one, Doctor. I may have to take a break for it, but childhood trauma, in particular, you know, coming from a dysfunctional family, addiction, right, et cetera.
Yeah, he mentions divorce of the parents. What that does is it damages the children's trust. And so they can be very hesitant to enter into a loving relationship with someone else to get married, because the trust is damaged. So you have to realize that. And that might make it difficult in dating and in the early phases of marriage, because you're waiting for that to blow up because that was the experience. Trust is damaged. Forgiving the parents for the divorce, because that's not fair to the children, even though it might have been fair to one of the parents to be able to survive, it's still not fair to the children. Forgiving helps reestablish the trust. In terms of hormones, God created hormones, and everything God creates is good. So hormones aren't necessarily going to lead to wild swings, okay? They might contribute, but we can't say hormones are what is making us angry, because that would be, again, a strictly materialist view of how we behave. And part of this conversation today is to show that materialism, hormones, or structures in the environment, like building homes for the homeless, are not the only thing we focus upon, but we focus upon the virtues and the growth of these virtues through the human heart. So even if someone has swings with the hormones that are more challenging, then the person's going to have to deal with bearing the pain, humility, and suffering with Christ for that. So it can be rather easily controlled. And then in terms of the last issue, yes, medication can help, but that's a materialist issue again. That simply covers over the symptoms. It doesn't transform the symptoms. So when we are overly angry, one thing to catch ourselves is the practice of humility. And what do I mean by that? Cultivating the belief in your heart of hearts that the world isn't always going to operate according to my expectations. And so the medication is not going to help me cultivate humility. I've got to do that work, okay? And so if we can do the heart work, the medications help, but the medications aren't the bottom line. What's the bottom line? The heart work of working on the virtues, whether it's forgiveness or whether it's respect for the other or whether it's humility or, as Danielle said, love. Are you cultivating agape, self-sacrificial love for the other, is the bottom line that is being ignored today.
All right. Doctor, let me hold it right there. I'll take a short pause. When we come back, if you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on the air. We only have a couple minutes left on the other side. Final segment coming up, but it's been great hanging with you. If you're just tuning in, we're taking a look at toxicity, anger in so many relationships, and what the root of it is, ultimately how we find freedom and healing. Stay with me. That conversation and more continues right after this.
Getting you connected. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I want to be there when the darkness closes in to make the truth a little clearer. I want to hold you close but never hold you back. I'll be the banks for your river.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I'll be the banks for your river.
Yeah, I like that. It's a little neat to breathe. Good afternoon. Hey, thanks for joining me. Thanks for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. If you missed any part of this conversation, maybe you tuned in late and you want to say, gosh, I really wish I heard that conversation on toxicity, toxic relationships, or anger, and want more of Dr. Bob Enright, relevantradio.com/Drew. It'll bring you to my podcast. Maggie will have today's show up probably about an hour after we're off. But you'll get all the shows that we have done in the past several weeks. And great, great conversations. I invite you to go back, maybe even share them with somebody else. It's always good to be here. We'll jump right back in the phones. If you're joining us, we are talking about how to find freedom from toxic relationships, from the woundedness that we have in those. You know, some of the signs of a toxic relationship are, you know, is it all take and no give, right? Is there draining and is there depression? Is it all about the other person? Are they not supported? Do they lack trust? Is there anger? Is there constant negativity? What's the solution? Well, we have to love, and quite often when we're hurt, we have to forgive. I think it was Father DeGrand. Was it DeGrand as I had heard? There was a great priest who once said in his healing ministry, he says, wherever I go, I tell people, forgive, 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 and keep on forgiving, because forgiveness is the pathway to healing. Forgiveness is loving. And Dr. Enright is an expert on forgiveness, one of our nation's leading experts on it. And, Doctor, it's good to have you back. Forgiveness is such a key part of this. I don't want to get through the conversation without at least touching on that for those who've been wounded by anger, by toxicity. You know, you don't want to be a punching bag, but at the same time, we are called to forgive. How do we draw that balance, and why is forgiveness so healing?
Well, forgiveness is not the same thing as just giving in. Forgiveness is deliberately and consciously trying to be good to those who are not good to you. And it's very, very healing, because what it does is it allows the other a second chance. You are extending your hand and say, come on up out of the pit. I want to be person to person with you, equal in terms of our worth. And that then starts softening the heart toward greater empathy, toward the one who's in the pit because of what that person did to me, for example. And as the person begins to do that, as the heart is softening, that toxic anger, that unhealthy anger, the resentment the mental health professionals talk about, actually begins to diminish. And we have science that shows that. We've worked with people in residential drug rehabilitation. We've worked with incest survivors. We've worked with acid burn victims. Wow. In Pakistan, okay? And even there, you see the sense of hope actually going up in people as their hearts actually begin to soften. And so forgiveness allows a second chance to the heart, and a second chance to the relationship if the other is willing to take your generosity, your gift of love, and say yes.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 888-914-9149. Thank you for your patience. If you're holding, I'll do my best to get you on. Lisa in Orange, Virginia, good to have you with us.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I just had a comment about anger in our youth, and I feel like the anger of our youth stems from society not telling them the truth. We are calling girls boys and boys girls. We're telling our youth that same-sex marriage is okay. We're lying to them about it's okay to kill babies. And I just feel that our youth are very confused and completely confused about things because adults are telling these lies, and they know that these things are lies. And in turn, we are creating this resentment or anger inside of them. And we need to start telling the truth to our children. And we need to start telling these truths to our children when they're young and create love in their hearts and know that they are loved by God because God is truth.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Lisa, doctor, I'll let you respond. We only have a few minutes, so I'm going to jump into a few more calls.
Yes, let's take a look at that. It's, I think, very important what you're saying. But when we use the word truth, let's also use the word faith. Faith and reason from St. John Paul II, right? Fides et ratio. If we give people the lack of truth, we're also not giving them faith. If we don't give them faith, we don't give them the direct, absolute purpose of how to live. We don't give them meaning in life. And when we don't give them meaning in life, then we give hopelessness. And when we give hopelessness, we have despair. And what's really important, here's Lisa's golden nugget here. She said we must teach the children when they are young about how to deal with the truth. Well, has anyone ever thought about training children when they're at their mother's knee to start learning about forgiveness? Forgiveness education is, to me, one of the most needed educational endeavors on this planet, and people don't see it. They're so intent on making sure they speak the King's English or they know what the what's the GPA, the economic situation in Madagascar, for example. Mm-hmm. And we miss the idea of forgiveness education. And we do have forgiveness education programs that have been used in 30 countries in the world. And we just did a scientific analysis across Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the United States. You know what we found? As children learn to forgive, they decrease significantly in anger.
That's
and
great.
So we need to, when they're bouncing on their mother's lap, they need to start learning about forgiveness so when the storms of life hit them, when they're 35, they will be fortified to deal with the conflict. It's a tragedy. We don't see this.
All right, let's try to grab another call or two before we run out of time. Jim in Rockford, Illinois, good afternoon.
Hi, is it me?
Yeah, Jim, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say my wife and I will celebrate 51 years next week.
Wow.
And congratulations.
One of the things I learned, we met at a prayer meeting, and one of the things I learned very early on in our marriage is that we were diametrically opposed. I was raised in a very loving family. Of course, with 10 kids, you don't mm-hmm. grow up not knowing how to forgive. You simply don't survive. But she was raised in a family. She had an older brother. And we used to work in marriage support, marriage preparation. And one of the talks that we would give on forgiveness, she would say that in her family, when they tore down the walls that were between them, they simply did it to get more ammunition.
Yeah.
And so when she first yelled at me for something, because this was her norm, you know, she grew up that way. I didn't know what to do, so I ran and hid. But we've learned that forgiveness is essential. You cannot live without forgiveness.
Amen.
And like I said, we've been married for 50 years. I'm looking to go for 75, but she's not sure she wants to live that way.
I love it. Jim, thank you. I have a minute left. I am grateful for your call ending on a positive note there. 51 years, we should take some advice from him, forgiveness being essential. Dr. Sean in Rhode Island, his wife had a lot of built-up anger because she was abused by her father. They had a long talk about it last night. Final thoughts. He wants to know what to do, and for all those who are listening here, I think forgiveness is one of those keys to the dysfunction of so many relationships.
Indeed. In fact, that's why we need to bring it front and center. I think we need to bring it more forthrightly and more frequently into the Catholic Church. I think it would be quite a very important theme, even for evangelization, because we're in a what's in it for me culture. And people are saying, well, why should I go to Mass? It's boring once a week. First, they don't understand the Eucharist to say that. But what if we could say there's an open door here to learn the virtue of forgiveness so that you can apply it, as Jim has just shown us, where he can last 50 years, even though they started with some incompatibilities, and nurture that in the hearts of people who come, the adults, and in the Catholic schools and in families, nurture the idea of learning about and deliberately practicing forgiveness. I think it could change the face of the Catholic Church when you have the less in it for me kind of society. They're going to say, well, there is something in it for me, healing, and I think it could enliven the Catholic Church.
God bless you, Doctor. I got to leave it right there. My deepest gratitude. That was Dr. Bob Enright.